Hi, everyone. Welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Nick Ruhrkraut.
And I'm Sophia Simonello.
And today we're back with a fun episode. We are celebrating Noirvember, as we try to do every year. This year, we'll be focusing on our theme, frequent cinematic collaborators, and talking about one of Hollywood's biggest romances between Lauren Bacall and Humphrey Bogart. They starred in 4 movies together, so we'll talk about those today and where they fit in their timeline together, how that came about, what came from that, and how the studio system really influenced their relationship and benefited from that. So I'm excited to talk about this today. I'm sure because you love pop culture and Hollywood lore and relationships that you knew a lot about them. So I'm excited to hear what you have to say about their relationship as well.
Yeah, I'm so excited for this episode because I think when you think about frequent collaborators and the way that we've interpreted that in this series so far, they are strictly collaborators in the workplace. And here we are talking about a famous marriage in addition to co-stars who work together in 4 films. And yeah, like you said, I love pop culture. I love celebrity gossip. And I especially love it from this period in history. I think it is so rich and fascinating to think of how stars met, how many marriages they've had. The fact that Humphrey Bogart was married 3 times before he knew Lauren Bacall is an interesting fact in and of itself. So I think it'll be fun today to talk through these movies. Really, like you said, in relation to Lauren Bacall and Humphrey Bogart's relationship and their marriage. And then I think to talk about why they stopped working together and what Bacall's career looked like a little bit. I'll share some of that after Humphrey Bogart passed away.
Yeah. So I think to start out, to find out that they got together pretty much because they starred in a movie together and that she was 19, 20 when they met and he was 45. Just kind of blew my mind, and that's kind of the tip of the iceberg. So watching their movies, I think you really get a sense of the fire behind their affair and why their love stood the test of time. It wasn't that long because Humphrey Bogart would pass in 1957 and they met on set in or around 1943, but to hear that he had multiple marriages before and that they kind of had to keep their affair quiet until he got his 3rd divorce may sound surprising, and it did to me, but also I feel like a lot of this happens in Hollywood, and this would have been like the juicy gossip that we love today in a lot of Hollywood power couples and A-listers. And I think knowing who these actors are now and how big they became, you know, Lauren Bacall was more at the beginning of her career at this time, but we look back on them both as big Hollywood stars. Lauren Bacall was nominated at the Oscars for Supporting Actress, later on for The Mirror Has 2 Faces. She did win an honorary in 2009 also, and Humphrey Bogart won an Oscar for Actor for The African Queen. And he had 2 other nominations for actor also in Casablanca and The Caine Mutiny. I think starting with their collaboration, so everything really starts around 1943, 1944 with To Have and Have Not. So that is their first collaboration together. This was directed by Howard Hawks. To me, this played like Casablanca Light. That movie just came out a couple years prior. And that really is the dynamic similar to Humphrey Bogart, again, with Ingrid Bergman, here with a fresh Lauren Bacall. So I really like to see them on screen. The movie really revolves around, to me, their relationship and them getting to know each other and knowing the history that they have outside of the movie. You really see their love blossoming and that they are really courting each other in this movie. So that adds just another fun layer to everything that's happening on and off screen.
Yeah. When you first see them together in To Have and Have Not, they have incredible chemistry. And I think because, you know, we've talked about Casablanca before on our show, and I think he and Ingrid Bergman also have great chemistry in Casablanca. I think he and Claude Rains might have better chemistry. But I think in the other films we've covered, we really are looking at the Humphrey Bogart that I think old Hollywood fans have come to know and love. It's this very particular, hardened, private eye, very serious. And I think when you see him with Bacall, you do feel that he's even more disarmed, really, by her presence than he is with any other co-star that you see throughout his career. So it is real there, which I like. And in thinking about a bit of the backstory, Howard Hawks was really interested in finding the, quote, American Marlene Dietrich. And his wife, who went by the nickname Slim, which is a curious little tidbit in and of itself, she was the one who actually discovered Lauren Bacall. And Lauren Bacall actually didn't have a contract with a studio like a lot of actresses did at the time with Warner Brothers or MGM, but she had a contract with Howard Hawks. So she was one of his muses in his filmography. And studio execs recommended that they change her hair, that they make her eyebrows thinner, that she talk differently, that she, you know, make her voice a little bit higher. And he was adamant that she did not. He wanted her to even lower her voice and to have that kind of sophisticated, brassy quality too, and to really keep it that way, to really be herself and be her own type of actress. But at the same time, he was also creating her in the image of his wife to create a version of his wife that he could control. I know that sounds bad, but it's a weird thing that some directors do when you think about how they're working with their muses. She even wore some of Slim's clothes on the set of the movie. So this is one of those things where you're like, Howard Hawks, what are you doing here? But I think, you know, she got her start as a model. She's very young when she makes this movie. And you can really see that relationship really start to come to life. And I kind of love when you can see that and you think, oh, this is not just two actors who are really good at their jobs doing this. This is real. This is going to extend into real life and off camera.
And there were so many, I think, playful and sexual moments on screen that they downplay because of the Hays Code. But I think it's so apparent because of the actors' styles and their amazing chemistry, like you said. I think from the first minute she lays eyes on him, she's standing in the doorway asking for a light. It could be a silent film, like there are no words spoken and you feel that tension in the air. And I think that's what's so special when you see them together on screen and their collaborations, because you feel that in all of these movies.
I mean, my favorite thing between the two of them here is really just in how they smoke. I think today when we're watching, you know, modern day movies, smoking always looks fake to me. And here, I think there is this really romantic quality of just the two of them smoking together, of the lighter that you mentioned. And I think we also have to talk about one of the best quotes in the movie while we're here, while we're on this one, before we move on to The Big Sleep, which is when she says, "You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow." This is, you know, one of those things that we'll talk about The Big Sleep too, full of double entendres. And we're in code time here, so we're going to see a lot of those moments between the two of them, especially in the writing.
And I think that was something that makes me want to read the Hemingway novel, is that there's so much of that subtext there in the written word that they weren't able to adapt because of the code. And I think what their relationship does on screen makes me want to see more, apart from their collaborations, but diving deeper into the source material. So they form this relationship. They start having an affair. Bogart is currently married, and The problem is when Howard Hawks finds out about this, and he nearly ends his contract with Lauren Bacall. But eventually, before the big sleep, he ends up getting divorced, and then they immediately marry on a farm in Lucas, Ohio. Another Ohio reference. No idea.
Were you why surprised they got married in Ohio?
I was like, why Ohio of all places? Once they were together, I think that really drew people to wanting to see more, especially in The Big Sleep, which is this huge detective noir film.
Yeah, so a little bit on them getting married. So I'll talk about the Ohio connection first. So this has always just been a very funny story to me as an Ohioan, and you're an Ohioan too, because you think about it and you're just like, what? Like, why aren't they getting married at like Chateau Marmont or something? Why is it? Why are they getting married in Ohio?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the wedding was hosted by Lewis Bromfeld, who won the Pulitzer. He wrote this novel called The Farm in 1933, and he grew up on an Ohio dairy farm. And that is where they ended up getting married. It's near Mansfield, I believe, mm-hmm. is where it is, but it's called Malabar, and it is very famous as a farm. So
interesting.
But it, of course, then just became, after they got married there, it became even more well-known, more famous, but many celebrities visited the farm over the years too. James Cagney. It's so funny. Yeah. It's just like this Ohio farm that all of the old Hollywood stars went to. And Bogart was a huge fan of Malabar.
That's so bizarre.
He went many times before they got married.
Of all places, like, how do they travel to Ohio? Why are they traveling? Time outside of their contract. Like, there's so many questions here. Especially Mansfield, mm-hmm. Ohio, which you can't fly into. I don't know. But, I mean, good for them.
And just talking about old Hollywood lore, you know, I love stuff like this, clearly. But Bogart was married 3 times before Lauren Bacall. And his third marriage was to an actress named Mayo Method. And this was the marriage when he started having the affair with Lauren Bacall. And this marriage was really complicated. For many reasons, they were both heavy drinkers. They liked to try to outdrink each other. And it was a very tempestuous relationship. And he had tried to end it many times. So it was this real back and forth nasty thing that they were a part of. So he was supposed to end it with her. He and Bacall would write love letters back and forth to each other. She really wanted to make it work with him. He's still married to her, but then he wants to try to make it work with his wife, and he calls it off with Bacall. So again, this back and forth between the two of them, and that's really when they start shooting The Big Sleep. And I really just love this telegram that he sends her. So after he and Mayo finally call it off, he sends Lauren Bacall, or Betty, as he called her, and as most people called her in her life, he sends her a telegram that says, "Please fence me in, baby. The world is too big, and I don't like it here without you." That's so 1940s.
Mm-hmm.
But then he ends up really fencing her in, not the other way around, which we'll get to shortly.
So then they film and release The Big Sleep. This is also directed by Howard Hawks, adapted from the Raymond Chandler novel. I love this movie. I think it can feel convoluted and like the story goes in so many places. But again, I think their romance shines apart from all the other characters. But I think they're definitely the standouts here because there's kind of this cat and mouse game that they play with each other. Like, he is hired by her father to investigate why they're being blackmailed, and it involves her sister Carmen. So then she gets involved, and there's this interest in him, Philip Marlowe, which turns into this more typical old Hollywood romance of sorts on screen.
Yeah, I love this movie. This is, of the four collaborations between the two of them, definitely my favorite. And there are many reasons why it has, I think, solidified its place in film noir history. and classic Hollywood history. And like I said before, Hawks was really capitalizing on the success of To Have and Have Not and the relationship between Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall and that chemistry that we've talked about in here. I think it actually deepens even more. I think that To Have and Have Not is a perfect introduction to the two of them, but this, I think there's a reason why this movie works so well despite the convoluted script, and that is the chemistry between these two characters. And just, I think how much I love the women in this movie, from Vivian to the bookshop girl.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love every single character here and just watching them throughout and how they interact with Philip Marlowe, because watching this movie, you just believe that he is the hottest man to have ever existed based on how these women are responding to him, mm-hmm. which I think is really funny and entertaining. And yeah, the script is kind of all over the place, a little convoluted, like we said. It's pretty hard to follow, which is why I would actually like to read the book. I think reading the book and then watching the movie would probably help me out. This script was written by Lee Brackett and William Faulkner. And I also read in doing research around this movie that Howard Hawks split the chapters. So Lee Brackett would cover some chapters in the script and Faulkner would cover others, and they didn't work together. So you can just imagine how all over the place this probably mm-hmm. felt. But again, I'm happy that we don't have scenes with a ton of exposition explaining everything to us. And instead, we just get to watch these characters live out the actions of the film. And it is just, it's one of those movies that is just so steamy, despite being, again, in the Hays Code. And it's what I think of when I think of classic film noir.
Yeah, and I think Howard Hawks loved worlds like that. I also think of Scarface, so these really dark noir films that have murder and action, but also romance. So, yes, I say following this movie might be difficult, but I also really love it because of that. There's almost a moment where it feels like you really don't know what's happening, but you can still follow it fine. Like, I'm not saying it's unwatchable mm-hmm. movie by any means.
No, not at all.
Twists and turns multiple times, and that's what I really like about how it ends up. I was going to say, when you were talking about his relationship with women, that their acting is also incredible in this movie. Bogart with some of those other women, it's like how you see them interact with him, but also I love the scene with Geiger's assistant, who really wants nothing mm-hmm. to do with him. And he plays yeah. like this sassy gay guy who comes up with in like a disguise, which is like the lowest form of disguises. And he comes back and takes off his glasses and she's like, oh my God, it's you. It's so dumb, but funny in how much control I think he has, depending on what he's trying to do in the scene. So I love how he always seems to be following Vivian, the Lauren Bacall character, throughout. And he always almost just happens upon her. Like, she ends up being in all of these places where you don't necessarily expect her to be. And I love that, you know, this is the second film of the two. We didn't really talk about her singing, but she sings in this movie too. So it seems to be coming a trend with them as well, that's another trait that adds to his love for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they technically, right, they get married before this film comes out, but this film was shelved for a little bit. And the studio tried to really exploit the Bacall Bogey relationship. So they cut a lot of the scenes where we would have maybe gotten a little bit more of an explanation. But I think it works out fine. I mm-hmm. really do. Like you said, I don't think it's not like watching Tenet or something like that. But like I mentioned, the bit with the whistling mm-hmm. before, I think the most famous double entendre we have here is, of course, about horse racing, which when you hear it in the film is a fascinating bit of writing. But The Big Sleep is really the last of the Howard Hawks collaborations between Bogart and Bacall. And I think that those two are really essential. So if you're listening to this and, you know, we're not spoiling anything from these movies, just in case. I know they've been around for a really long time. But if you do want to see them on screen together, I really recommend just going in order and starting with these two. These two, for me, are probably the essential pair in getting to know who they were as movie stars, but also opposite each other. And we can also talk about Dark Passage from 1947 and Key Largo from 1948. Both, I think, also good movies. And we have great performances from the both of them. And again, I think just continued chemistry on screen.
Yeah, and I really like, you did mention this, but from To Have and Have Not to The Big Sleep, you can feel the change in their relationship in that they are familiar with each other. And I think that continues into Dark Passage. It's kind of a funny way of how they meet, but I think still how they play together on screen is an extension of their relationship off screen. I really like Dark Passage. It has this Hitchcockian tone to it. And way back when we talked about Nickel Boys, you know, you have that first person POV throughout the entire movie. And Delmer Daves, the director, uses that here in the first act of the film to hide Bogart's face. And that has to do with the plot, but you really get to see and focus on Bacall. So he has escaped from prison, and Bacall, who plays Irene Jensen, picks him up off the side of the road as he's escaping. And she's like, quick, come into my van. And she like helps him hide out at her apartment. And there is more that plays into the story. I would recommend watching this because of their relationship and just the film. But another thrilling noir that I think is a fun addition to their collaborations together because of another co-star, Agnes Moorehead, who plays their nasty neighbor. So I like how she kind of adds this different kind of element to their relationship and him having to like hide out in her apartment. And her character thinks that she's like having an affair. There's a different kind of complexity than I think we've seen so far.
So I had never seen Dark Passage. This was one of my, you know, even though they only have four collaborations together, this was a first time watch for me, which I know is rare for me with classic Hollywood films. But I really enjoyed this. It does, like you said, I think have some fun Hitchcockian tricks up its sleeve. And I do think what you were talking about was spending the first 40 minutes or so through that distinctive POV. And then seeing him look in the mirror and we see Humphrey Bogart, you see his full face. I wonder what that was like for audiences at the time to watch the film in a particular way. And then we have that mirror shot of the two of them looking in the mirror together. I think Bacall is really good here. She actually had a few negative or less than stellar reviews for performances for To Have and Have Not and The Big Sleep. I disagree with those. I think that's probably just a product of the time and not understanding her. But here, I really love her. Also, you know this, I'm a huge Agnes Moorehead fan. I love her. I was obsessed with her as Endora and Bewitched when I was a child. So it was thrilling to see her here. And she gives my favorite performance in the movie.
Have we talked about her on the pod? Because I didn't recognize her. I think this was my first movie I've seen with her. And it was funny because I just went to see The Magnificent Ambersons yesterday. And she was in that. And I was like, oh my God. Because there's a shot in Dark Passage where you see her through like the door peephole kind of. And I just couldn't stop thinking of that shot as I was watching Ambersons and just remembering her kooky character from that.
I know we covered Sorry, Wrong Number.
Oh, yeah.
With Barbara Stanwyck, and I know she is in that. I mean, I started really loving her from TV, But I don't think we've done, because we didn't do Hush Hush Sweet Charlotte.
Mm-mm. I mean, Citizen Kane, but...
Agnes Moorhead,
yeah,
and her filmography. Like, that's so really funny. What we need to be doing. Because she has so many that I love. Mm-hmm. Have you seen Magnificent Obsession?
No.
The Douglas Sirk movie? Okay, well, you need to watch that. She's in that. I feel like that's a big one for Bennett and me.
And All That Heaven Allows.
There are quite a few from the 40s that you would like. Yeah, All That Heaven Allows. She's also, I mean, Citizen Kane, Magnificent Ambersons. Those are obviously two of her earliest ones. We didn't talk about Mrs. Parkington either, the Greer Garson movie. Okay, good. Yeah, I'm just looking through her filmography now and I'm like thinking, what would we have covered? And I think we can definitely dig into more. But did you watch Bewitched at all?
No, I never saw that growing up. Yeah, just the Nicole Kidman movie when that came out.
Oh, no. Agnes Moorhead as Endora, one of my favorite characters. The hair, the makeup, yeah. Everything about her. Definitely partially inspired Gladys, Aunt Gladys in Weapons and the look of her a little bit. But Endora is far more fabulous.
Well, and then you have like Lauren Bacall in Written on the Wind, another Douglas Sirk movie, and mm-hmm. How to Marry a Millionaire. So, yeah, you start to get into a lot of these 60s movies and shows that were really popular. So, yeah, I have a lot more to do, I think. And because of this, it makes me want to check some of those out. So I'll have to, we'll check back in and, yeah, maybe have to do an Agnes Moorhead episode. She's so great here. I agree.
She's so great. Best Supporting Actress, Agnes Moorhead, mm-hmm. please. My Oscar for this movie. And then we get into their last collaboration, Key Largo. So this is in 1948, directed by John Huston. John Huston and Humphrey Bogart are also a possible pair for a frequent collaborator series, I would say, because they worked together a number of times. I think most notably on The Maltese Falcon, which we've covered on the show before, The Treasure of the Sierra Madre, and of course The African Queen, which we've also covered, which Bogart would win his Best Actor Oscar for. Key Largo, so I'll just read our letterbox description here. A hurricane swells outside, but it's nothing compared to the storm within the hotel at Key Largo. There, sadistic mobster Johnny Rocco holds up and holds at gunpoint hotel owner James Temple, his widowed daughter-in-law Nora, and ex-GI Frank McLeod. So here, I think we have another pretty great collaboration between the two of them. I really like this movie. I think that the performances really from all of the actors are great, but especially I think the supporting turns from Edward G. Robinson and Claire Trevor. Claire Trevor would win supporting actress for her work here in Key Largo. But this, I think, is also another great example of Bogart and Bacall's chemistry. And I think here... he's a little, what's the word I'm looking for? Sweeter than normal than some of his other movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in comparison to the other three that we've talked about, we get a little bit of a different side to Humphrey Bogart here. I'm also just going to say this. I think Lauren Bacall's face is just one of the most stunning old Hollywood faces that we have. And I think you notice it in all of them, but here especially.
Yeah, I think of the collaborations, I'm least high on this one. I think all the performances are fabulous, especially by Edward G. Robinson as the mobster Johnny Rocco. The fact that this is also our only Oscar nomination that we're talking about, that Claire Trevor wins for. She plays this alcoholic guest at the hotel. I think she's great, fine. It's maybe a weird win, I think, considering the other actors we have here. But I think that's also telling of John Huston's hand over his actors and productions. Mm-hmm. And I think I say it's not for me because this is very much a romance film. It's atmospheric. Mm-hmm. We're in this one location inside the hotel during this hurricane, and there's drama unfolding within, but it's also pretty straightforward. So whatever part of that, I just didn't really latch on to it, but again, performances great, relationship here between Bogart and Betty's characters wonderful. I think by this point, because this would be their last collaboration together, we're just kind of enjoying them on screen. We'd seen what they could do so far in their other three films. And again, it's just a joy to see them together.
And one thing I'll say about their collaboration here is that this is the one that Bacall speaks about most fondly. And it's probably fitting because it is their last. She said it, she called it, quote, one of the happiest movie experiences. I thought how marvelous a medium the movies were to enable one to meet, befriend, and work with such people. So she had a great relationship with the cast and clearly, I think, a really strong relationship with Bogart here. And this being their last collaboration, I think they definitely could have gone on to make additional films together, but he really wanted her to be a wife. And he did not permit her to shoot on location because that would mean that she was away from him. And she loved him and she speaks so highly of him and their relationship. I think especially if you think about the later relationships that she has, which I do want to spend like 30 seconds talking about at the very end, but she devotes herself to him as his wife and they have two children together. And I think that's something that shifts and changes her career a little bit. I think when you think about Lauren Bacall's career, you think of it in stages, and the first part is really in these noir collaborations with Humphrey Bogart, but then later it's on stage in New York, which is a totally separate thing for her that doesn't happen until after he passes away, which is in just a few years from the end of this film. He is diagnosed with cancer in 1956 and passes away in 57.
And I think when you think of them two as an on-screen pair, you would assume that they would have many more collaborations together than just four. And a lot of that is because of the Hollywood system. Again, Bogart's contract ended after Key Largo. He didn't renew with Warner Brothers. And that, in short, is the reason why they never started a movie together again. But when he opened his own production company called Santana Productions, he needed a distributor for In a Lonely Place, the Nicholas Ray film he starred in, but he went to Columbia and not Warner Brothers, and Warner was pissed at him for that. So when he had asked to have Lauren Bacall loaned outside of that studio, he basically said no because of this, because he was holding a grudge. And him passing away 8 years after this, I kind of like that they have a separate life than one that we just see on screen. But I think it's one that, because maybe it was cut short, we honor that and look back on these movies fondly.
So I think if you could give this movie one Oscar question, what would it be? If it's outside of Lauren Bacall and Humphrey Bogart, definitely give that answer if you do have one or if that's your overall answer. But I'm curious, if you could give him one Oscar and her one Oscar, what would you pick?
I have a different question too that I'll ask after this, but I kind of want to go with Dark Passage for him, but I think I'm going to go with the easy answer and say The Big Sleep for him and To Have and Have Not for Bacall.
Okay. I love both of those. I'm going to say Dark Passage for her, because I think that's really where her chemistry with him feels the most electric. And I really loved her in that. I think that's the one where I feel like she dominates the film a little bit more. And I really loved her in that. And then for him, I have to say The Big Sleep. I mean, there's a reason why Raymond Chandler thought that Bogart was the best Philip Marlowe. And here, I think we get the best version of that. And if I'm thinking outside of these collaborations, I would probably give them Oscars for other work, possibly. But I do really love these performances from both of them.
Yeah, and you know, we have adaptations of at least The Big Sleep I know of. I'm kind of scared to touch it. It is a 70s film. Have you seen the Robert Mitchum Big Sleep?
I have not. I have just seen this one.
I mean, I'm scared because I love it so much. But I think my question for you, for us, on a take of if you could give this movie one Oscar, is it, what is your favorite collaboration between them two?
I think it has to be The Big Sleep, because I think that takes what we start to see in To Have and Have Not, but intensifies it. And I think the film overall is also stronger. I love how they interact with each other, but again, how they interact with the supporting characters is also more interesting, I think, than To Have and Have Not. So we're seeing, I think, a better version of the genre and a more realized version of their chemistry, but it's still early, so it still feels really fresh and like, oh, he might leave his wife very soon for her, which I think is fun. So I think I would go with The Big Sleep. What about you?
I don't think there's a wrong answer in the bunch. They all have their reasons why people would pick them. So I think I appreciate that. But I think I would say To Have and Have Not. I like that you can see and feel the fire that they have for each other as they're getting to know each other. And you kind of see that as they play off of each other too. And in like getting to know each other, it's this fun, kind of mysterious way of acting that we don't normally see. So I think it's one that I would definitely revisit just for them. But I think the plot adds enough to that it's a fun experience. But again, I think all of these movies are exceptional in their own way. So I'm glad that, yeah, I had only seen The Big Sleep before. So three of these were new to me, and it's just more old Hollywood that you get to love and experience. And we mentioned the Hays Code and what that did for these movies too, along with the performances. So I'm glad we got to cover these today and talk about Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall.
Me too. And we've covered Humphrey Bogart, like we said, a few times before, but it was great, I think, to cover his work with Lauren Bacall. And if you're interested in watching more films by either of them, I definitely recommend checking them out and going back and listening also to our old episodes where we talk about The Maltese Falcon and a few of his films. But for her, I also think she's really wonderful in Jonathan Glazer's Birth. That's an amazing supporting role from her. And you mentioned Written on the Wind. I think we should do a Douglas Sirk episode at some point too. But yeah, she had a really interesting life. I think after Bogart passed away, she had very complicated relationships, and one with Frank Sinatra and then a marriage with Jason Robards. And I think her life's love really was Humphrey Bogart, really was Bogey.
Yeah. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Feel free to rate, review, and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Blue Sky. You can find bonus content on our Patreon at patreon.com/OscarWilde and updated nomination predictions on our website at oscarwilde.squarespace.com.
And while this week we went back in time talking about old Hollywood, next week we'll be doing a fall release roundup. So we'll be checking in on some of the movies we haven't talked about, like Begonia, Frankenstein. We'll probably have a full list of movies we haven't talked about that are out in theaters now. So look forward to that. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.